Well, welcome everyone. Thank you for being here. It's good to be here at Advent Hope. As it turns out, they called me last night, see if I could fill in. I've got, I just finished rounding in the ICU, so everyone's put to bed. Hopefully we don't have any emergencies. The title of today's talk is Light as Medicine. Now, I'm a pulmonary and critical care physician. I'm also a sleep specialist. And so when I tell you this, that what I'm about to tell you today, I can guarantee you most of you in this room have never heard of this. Even physicians who are in this room have probably never heard of it. I'm a sleep physician, and some of this stuff was new to me. But as I started to learn it, I started to become excited because what I'm about to tell you could change your life. What I'm about to tell you and what I'm about to show you may explain why the United States has 4% of the world's population but has 25% of COVID-19 cases. We may think here in developed countries that we're better off than our brothers and sisters in Africa, the subcontinent, but what I'm about to tell you may change your mind. I think you'll see it by the end of this talk. That number one, Ellen White was a genius, or she was inspired by someone who was a genius. And maybe you should start paying attention to what she says a little bit more carefully. That's number one. And number two, you may realize that you may be prisoners of your own success. The very first words out of God's mouth was what? Let there be light. I won't get into the quantum mechanics of light, because if you study quantum mechanics, you start to realize how little we really know. That you can actually observe light, and by observing light, you can change the properties of light. I see my old physics TA up there nodding his head. He knows better than I do. Let's talk about light. All right, there's going to be a lot of information in this talk. I'm going to try to condense it as much as we possibly can. But it's going to be mind-blowing. So just put your seatbelts on and get ready. When God said, let there be light, and he said, and the light was good, he wasn't kidding. Light is more than what you just see. It's more than a beautiful day. Light interacts with humans in two different ways. There is the light that comes into our eye that we see, that we visualize. It goes back to the occipital cortex of the brain, and we can visualize light. But light interacts with our bodies in a way that we have no idea about. Until now, we are now just starting to understand that we have receptors for light in the mitochondria of our bodies, and that has a major impact on our health. Let's talk about both of those. First of all, let's set the scene here. Let's talk about mitochondria. For those of you that are not in the medical field or understand this, I will try to boil it down for you. Everyone laughs when I say this, but mitochondria are the powerhouse of the cell, okay? So that is the mitochondria. We're going to open up God's second book today. I think everybody in the world needs to understand the information that I'm going to present today. I think it's more important at this time than anything else. So let's buckle up and let's pray for the Word of God and for the Holy Spirit. Dear Lord, please be with us today as we open up your Word and the second book, which is Nature. Help us to understand exactly what it is that's going on and help us to understand more about you. In thy name, amen. So the mitochondria are like engines in your cars, like, you know, internal combustion engines, not the Tesla engines. Those internal combustion engines, the purpose of those engines is to make locomotion. But as a byproduct of that, it makes heat. And if you're not careful with that heat, it could shut down the engine. You need a good cooling system. And the same thing happens in the mitochondria. Without getting into two technicalities, and I could do that if you want, we could talk about glucose going to glucose 6-phosphate, going to fructose 6-phosphate, fructose 1,6 bisphosphate, going to 3-glyceraldehyde, 3-phosphate, 3-phosphoglycerate, 2-phosphoglycerate, phosphoenolpyruvate, and then pyruvate, and then going to acetyl-CoA, going into the matrix of the mitochondria, combining with oxaloacetate to make citrate, going to isocitrate, alpha-ketoglutarate, succinyl-CoA, malate, fumarate, oxaloacetate, and making electrons and all that sort of stuff, right? Okay? It's all there. But the point is, no, don't clap. It's taking up neurons that I can't free up. The electrons that come from the food that you eat, whether it's glucose, protein, or fats, goes through the electron transport chain. And from that, it leverages these high-energy electrons to make ATP, which is the energy of the cell. In the process of doing that, which is the locomotion, unfortunately, it has to pass those electrons off to something. In this case, it's oxygen. So oxygen, that's the reason why you breathe. That's the reason why you need oxygen. Without oxygen, you would not be able to do electron transport chain. You would have to do anaerobic metabolism, and you would die very quickly. Okay? So the point is that oxygen needs to accept those four electrons to make water. Now, sometimes it doesn't happen well, and you make hydroxy radicals, hydrogen peroxide, superoxides. These are very dangerous molecules. They only have to travel very short distances, maybe a few angstroms, before they oxidize the proteins next to them and they destroy it. It's heat in the engine. If you don't deal with that heat in the engine, it'll seize the engine and the whole thing will fail. So the big problem is oxidative stress in the mitochondria. This is the power plant of the cell. This is where heat is created. And unless you have something there in the mitochondria to absorb those hydroxy radicals, you shut the whole thing down. Now, you say, well, this is just mitochondria, Dr. Schwell. What's wrong with that? Well, if you go to the Cleveland Clinic's website, you will see that mitochondrial dysfunction has been linked to poor health, inflammation, cancer, dementia, diabetes, even learning disabilities like autism. And I will submit to you today, it's the majority of COVID-19. This is extremely important. So how did God put these nuclear reactors inside of ourselves? He must have given us a way to deal with it. What's the cooling system of the body? And he came up with a two-part system, something that happens at night and something that happens during the day. Now, we are very familiar, most of us, some of us, are what happens during the night. You may not be aware of this. But in the nighttime, which is what we discovered first because it's easy to figure out because it's in the blood, the brain, through the pineal gland, stimulates the secretion of melatonin, which goes into the bloodstream, that gets taken up by the cells and actively transported into the mitochondria. Melatonin is the most powerful antioxidant that we know of. It itself upregulates glutathione. It's twice as powerful as vitamin E. It is a super antioxidant. And at night, when you're in bed, inactive, the backup system is melatonin. What about during the day? This is the part that I'm sure most of you are not aware of, but the sun itself, sunlight through near-infrared radiation, penetrates through your skin and actually illuminates the mitochondria. There's a protein in the electron transport chain called cytochrome C oxidase, which is a receptor for this light, and it stimulates the production of melatonin right there on site. We're talking about intramitochondrial melatonin, and that is what cools the body down during the day. So think about this. What happens as you get older? What happens as your car gets older? Your cooling system doesn't work so well, right? What happens if you start to run your engine without a cooling system? It starts to break down, and all of those things that we just talked about start to happen. So what shuts down melatonin production at night? Light. Light, okay? Flipping on the lights at night, after the sun goes down, after 9 o'clock at night, flipping on, we know this now in the last 10, 20 years. Watching television, looking at your iPhone, reading your iPad, all of that shuts down melatonin production. Are you getting near infrared radiation from the sun at nighttime? Nope. Are you getting melatonin from your pineal gland at nighttime when you leave the lights on? Nope. Your water pump just broke, and it's breaking every night. What about during the daytime? Are you getting melatonin when you're out at work? No, because light is hitting your eyes. Are you outside getting near-infrared radiation? Here's a statistic. Do you know how much average time an American spends outside? 7% of their waking hours. Do you know how much it used to be back in the 1800s? 50%. There's more to come. This, I believe, is the major factor as to why the United States has 25% of the cases, even though we only have 4% of the population. Let's take a look at the spectrum of light. from the sun, only 39% of the energy from the sun is in the visible spectrum. 54% of the energy is coming from the infrared spectrum. Specifically, we're going to talk about IRA, or near infrared. This is the wavelength from 760 to 1400. This is really important to understand. We'll talk about this again. But you ever have those teenagers pull up next to you at the stoplight and they're blaring that thing they call music? Right? What do you hear? You don't hear the music. All you hear is boom, 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 right? And your steering wheel's vibrating, right? That's because it's a low-frequency energy. It's penetrating not only their car, but your car, and it's vibrating your steering wheel. That's because high wavelength or long wavelength infrared is very good at penetrating through things. Whereas on the other end of the extreme, ultraviolet B, ultraviolet A, not very good. For the ultraviolet light to come through, the sun has to be pretty high in the sky so that there's less atmosphere for it to penetrate. Whereas when the sun is rising or the sun is setting, there's a lot more atmosphere has to go through. You don't get a lot of ultraviolet light. That's why people who live at high latitudes in the wintertime, they don't get enough ultraviolet light. They don't get enough vitamin D. But they get plenty of infrared. It can penetrate. It would be a mistake for you to think that because you're not getting enough sunlight, you can just take vitamin D capsules. That would be a mistake. I'm not saying don't take vitamin D. I take vitamin D capsules. But it would be a mistake, a major mistake, as you'll see, to think that just because you're on vitamin D, you don't need to go out in the sun. You think we can take God's creation and condense it into a capsule? So why is this important? We're not going to talk a lot about what happens during the day because I think a lot of you understand that. You know that the suprachiasmatic nucleus in the brain is like the conductor. It's the master clock. You have to start all the instruments in your body at the right time for everything to sort of work in conjunction. So there's certain times of the day that things have to happen. You eat during the day. You don't eat at night. It's like going to Disneyland. In Disneyland, during the day, all the rides are working. Everything's going. At night, there's just as much activity happening, but it's all the employees getting ready for the next day. That's the same thing that happens to your body. Certain things have to happen at night for you to be ready to do what you need to do the next day. And it's all timed on this master clock. So this is what happens. This is the backup system. You're in bed. You're sleeping. The sun is not there. You're not getting near infrared radiation. You've got no coolant system on your mitochondria. And so what happens here is light goes into the eye, and it hits these receptors. These are not rods and cones. These are something called intrinsically photosensitive retinal ganglion cells. And they are in the retina, and they project. They're predominantly in the lower part of the retina. And they project back, and they go to two places that have nothing to do with vision. This is subconscious light that you're seeing. This is light that your body is detecting, and you don't see it. Okay, I want you to think about that. Goes to the suprachiasmatic nucleus. If there is light going to the suprachiasmatic nucleus, the brain says, aha, it's daytime. We don't need melatonin. Melatonin is the body's way of telling all the cells in the body, it's time to sleep. It's time to sleep. Intravenous melatonin tells the body it's time to sleep. You understand what I'm saying? Okay. So it shuts down melatonin production. So if you are at night and there is no sun and you're putting a light on your eyes, you have no melatonin production. You're running your engines hot. You're not taking care of your mitochondria. So it's really important to understand that. All these things on this page that I'm listing here are regulated by the circadian rhythm. Peripheral clocks, feeding and fasting rhythms, cholecystokinin, leptin, ghrelin, that has to do with appetite. Body temperature, pancreas, glucose metabolism, vasopressin, acetylcholine, cortisol, insulin. These are all the things that the scientists have looked at in the last 20, 30 years. And you know what? They're coming up with conclusions that are identical to the conclusions that we knew in this church over 100 years ago. And it's taking us, we're giving it up to the scientists to tell us what to do when we've got the answer book. It's amazing. I'll show you more here. So, we've studied this in rodents, we've studied this in humans. if you mess up their circadian rhythm, so it's not timed correctly, then you're going to have problems. Problems with immunity, problems with tumor development, problems with appetite, problems with insulin resistance, diabetes, problems with inflammation. You've got to have your circadian rhythm timed right. Your circadian rhythm is your internal clock that tells you when you should be sleeping and when you should be awake. And if it's not timed with reality, you're going to have problems. So this is your circadian rhythm up top. You can see here in this case that the darkness is lined up perfectly with reality. So you can see here that the blue, that's when your body is saying you should be asleep, is perfectly lined up with night. Your day is perfectly lined up with day. And your night is lined up with night. This is perfect. This is you living on a desert island. Okay? No electronics. No stress. When the sun goes down, there's no more light. And the body loves that. Okay? Now let's introduce American society. Social media, addiction, looking at light, specifically blue light, okay? You have to realize that you were hardwired to look at light and say, if we see light, that must be day. So here's the circadian rhythm working perfectly, and all of a sudden at night after the sun goes down, you turn on the television, you turn on the computer, it's saying, oh, there's light. But I thought day was over here. Oh, light's over here. We need to delay the circadian rhythm to incorporate that time of night for day. And so what you get is a delaying, watch what happens here, you get a delaying of the circadian rhythm when you expose your eyes to bright light at night. It delays it. Notice what happens as a result of that. Here, it's nighttime, and you should be going to sleep, but because you've exposed your eyes to bright light at night, your body is not ready to go to sleep. That's called insomnia. Insomnia is a big problem in the United States. It's not a big problem. You go over to Africa and interview people. Do you have problems sleeping? There's these people who are 60, 70 years old. Do you have problems sleeping? No. Why would I have problems sleeping? You ask adults and elderly people in the United States, 25% incidence of insomnia. Conversely, if you look at the other end of the day, look at this. The sun comes up, and what does our circadian rhythm say? We ought to be sleeping still. How many have a problem with this? And what does this lead to? Starbucks stock going up. That's what it leads to, okay? All of the problems of the society that we're seeing are right here on this screen, okay? And it's because we're looking at stuff at night. We're looking at these things. Now, some of us have to do it, right? We're on call. But remember I said that the intrinsically photosensitive retinal ganglion cells are in the inferior portion of our retina. We have any eye doctors in here? If it's in the inferior portion of our retina, what part of our visual field is that? The superior part of our visual field. That means light that's up above, when it gets to the lens, it gets flipped around, and it hits the bottom of our retina. So light that is high up in the sky is going to be very good at regulating our circadian rhythm. Isn't that interesting? That's where the sun is in the sky. Isn't that interesting? So if you have to look at something, my recommendation would be hold it low, hold it far away from you, because a radiance is 1 over the radius squared, or the distance squared, right? You know that from physics. So if you hold it twice as far away, it's going to be a quarter of the intensity. And holding it deep down, sort of low. So something you might want to consider in your house is dimming down the lights as much as possible at night, and maybe putting lights around the bottom, okay, sort of plug-ins, and then getting them on a dimmer. And I think what you'll notice is you'll sleep a lot better at night, and you'll feel better rested in the morning. The other thing you can do to shift the circadian rhythm back the other way is you can expose your eyes to bright light early in the morning. Does this start to sound familiar to you? Getting up early, going outside. Is this sounding familiar to you? Isn't it interesting how we're coming up with very similar things? So don't do this, okay? So light after sunset tends to delay your circadian rhythm by suppressing melatonin production in the pineal gland. This causes your body to delay sleep onset. But light early on when you wake up tends to advance your circadian rhythm, but requires more intensity given that the IPRGCs, that's the intrinsically photosensitive retinal ganglion cells, are less sensitive at the beginning of the day, so you need more light. Going outside, really good. So we talked about how intrinsically photosensitive retinal ganglion cells go to the suprachiasmatic nucleus. Guess what? There's another place that they go that's not the occipital lobe where you have vision. It goes to something called the perihabenular nucleus. There's going to be a test on this at the end. This has to do with mood. Do you know that 5% of the population have something called SAD, seasonal affective disorder? They're not outside, and it's worse in the wintertime, obviously because the sun is lower. They've seen that if this perihabenular nucleus doesn't get input, there can be real problems, and there's been some studies that have shown that people who get exposed to bright light, their depression goes away. People with bipolar depression, that goes away. Take a look at this. This is a wonderful graph. This is an e-reader at night. Now, you can't hardly see it, but do you see this graph right here? This is a histogram of the wavelength of the amount of light hitting the eye from an e-reader at night, okay? As opposed to turning on a light and reading a book. You can't even see it, but it's down there at the bottom. Can you see that there a little bit? That's the difference in the amount of irradiation that's hitting the eye. My recommendation would be to toss your e-reader at night. Pull out a regular, good old-fashioned book. Maybe a red book. Actually, Ellen White says what we shouldn't be reading at night. It pulls too much blood to the brain, she says, when the brain needs to be going to sleep. So they looked at those, they did a study, and it showed that people who did e-readers took them longer to go to sleep than those that read regular books. So what should you do in the morning? Sunlight before 9 a.m. 30 seconds to 30 minutes. It's better if you go outside. It's better if you're in full sun. Don't wear sunglasses. Don't wear blue blockers. If you can't do this, or when you're getting up in the morning, it's dark, buy one of those SAD lamps, or SAD lamps, seasonal affective disorder lamps. They give you about 10,000 lux. Do it for about 20 to 30 minutes, about 11 to 15 inches from the light box. You can buy these light boxes online, okay? You're going to notice that you're going to feel a lot better. What do you do in the evening? Limit light as much as possible after sunset, specifically after 9 p.m. It should be dim, it should be low in the visual field, and it should be away from the blue spectrum. Red is better. What about in the evening? So put your Mac and iPhones on night shift. PC tablets, get your FLUX, which is a free program. All of these things, try to mitigate as much as possible. Try to avoid it as much as possible. Okay? All right. That's the review. That's the stuff that you should know about already, because everybody knows about that stuff, right? If you just, any kind of knowledge on this. This is the next part. I almost guarantee you that nobody knows this in this room. Get ready to be blown away. There's the mitochondria. We talked about the mitochondria, we talked about the oxidative stress, we talked about the learning disabilities, we talked about night and day. We know about the backup system at night, which is from the pineal gland in the brain. It's easy for us to have figured this out because you just have to measure melatonin in the blood. It's extremely difficult and very technical to be able to measure intramitochondrial melatonin. You know how difficult that is? Not only are you going into the cell, you're going into an organelle of the cell. So you need very sophisticated techniques. But we know now that near-infrared radiation from the sun excites and stimulates the mitochondria to make its own melatonin orders of magnitude higher than what the pineal gland makes. This is an amazing review. I highly recommend you guys read this. This is required reading. In fact, a lot of my presentation is going to be based on this paper. It was actually written by a professor and a light engineer. What I'm about to show you is going to completely revolutionize your thought about going outside into the sun, or at least going outside. Okay? Melatonin and Optics of the Human Body, written by Scott Zimmerman and Russell Ryder. This is what they say in the paper, that melatonin is produced within the mitochondria in response to sunlight and provides targeted protection from mitochondria from reactive oxygen species. Accordingly, melatonin is protective against a range of diseases characterized by mitochondrial dysfunction, including cancer, neurodegenerative diseases, cardiovascular diseases, and diabetes. Folks, you don't see these diseases in Africa. You see them here in the United States. It may have a role in prevention on the treatment of Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's, even COVID-19, which we'll talk about. So what they say, this is a quote from their paper, it has now been shown that mitochondria produce melatonin in many cells in quantities which are orders of magnitude higher than produced in the pineal gland. This subcellular melatonin does not necessarily fluctuate with our circadian clock or release into the circadian rhythm, but instead has been proposed to be consumed locally in response to free radical density within each cell, in particular in response to near-infrared exposure. 95% of the body's melatonin is in the mitochondria. They go on, based on the optical and biological review of the literature, it is proposed that near-infrared portion of the natural sunlight stimulates an excess of antioxidants in each of our healthy cells, and that the cumulative effect of its antioxidant reservoir is to enhance the body's ability to rapidly and locally deal with changing conditions throughout the day. In this approach, the role of circulatory melatonin from the pineal gland is to provide an efficient method of delivering supplemental melatonin during periods of low cellular activity, and that the solar stimulus to stimulus to damaged or aging cells in both diurnal and nocturnal animals. So what they're saying here is that circulatory melatonin from the pineal gland is the hormone of darkness, but that subcellular melatonin produced in the mitochondria is the hormone of daylight. And you've got coverage on both ends. If you have light when you shouldn't have light, melatonin goes down. If you don't have light when you should have light, melatonin goes down. When it's dark, it should be dark. When it's light, you should be outside in the sun. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay. Do I remember some quotes about how every day we ought to go out into the light and work outside? But what is society telling us? If we want to work out, we go to the... with the fluorescent lights that have no near-infrared radiation whatsoever. LEDs, forget about it. So this near-infrared radiation is around 760 to 1400 nanometers, can penetrate into the epidermis, dermis, subcutaneous tissue. There are some studies, as you'll see, it could even, they say, penetrate up to 8 centimeters. So this is what comes from the sun. This red envelope here, you can see between these two black lines, this is the amount of energy that is in the visible spectrum. Everything to the right of that is near-infrared radiation. The majority of the energy coming from the sun is in the near-infrared spectrum. Do you want to know what it feels like? Go outside with a t-shirt on and put your back to the sun. What do you feel? That's near-infrared radiation. And the reason why you can feel it is because it's penetrating your clothes. It's penetrating your epidermis, your dermis, and it's going deep down to where the heat receptors are in your back, and it's exciting them, and that's why you feel warmth. And it's going right past them, by the way. That's the warmth of the sun. Do I remember a quote from Ellen White saying, "Go out into the light and warmth of the sun"? So this is basically physics, guys. Ultraviolet radiation doesn't penetrate very well. You can put sunscreen on, you can put clothes on, you can protect yourself from ultraviolet radiation if you're concerned about cancer, melanoma. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But it's not going to block near infrared. It's going to go right through, which is exactly what you want. Did Ellen White say to go outside naked? She just said go outside because God has already planned it. That the sun is going to take care of you every day for free. Do you need a diagnosis? Do you need a prescription? Do you need a company to make the medicine? Take a look. It's outside right now. When I started to learn about this, I had this incredible urge to drop everything and just go outside. I'm serious. I did. This is from Reiter's study. Notice here, there's a lot of reflectance, but notice up to 8 centimeters deep. Now, if you imagine 8 centimeters all around your body, that's a lot of cells, isn't it? So how many of here are nurses? Do you know that little device that you use to see where the veins are? Right? That's near infrared. Take a look. So on the left, visible light reflects off the surface of the skin. The near-infrared penetrates deep into the tissue. It's absorbed by the blood vessels, the veins, and then the rest gets absorbed. So you can see very clearly where the veins are, and now you know where to put the needle. This just proves to you that near-infrared penetrates. This is what they came up with. The black line at the top is the number of cells in the human body as you get older and as age. As you can see there, it just confirms exactly what I know. That is, everything is downhill after 20 years. But notice, the red line is the number of cells that are affected by near-infrared radiation. That's the majority of the cells. It's because near-infrared penetrates. Okay, now here comes the mind-blowing part, literally. Near-infrared can penetrate your skull. In fact, this physics professor basically says this. Check this out. Near-infrared radiation goes through the skull, and when it hits the cerebral spinal fluid that surrounds the brain, it diffuses the light all the way around the brain, and then the sulci and the gyri capture, with using reflectance, that light deep down into the sulci and the gyri of the brain, exciting and stimulating the gray matter of the brain. Do you know that for over 100 years, we have known that students that are in natural light perform better, they think better, they're less aggressive, to the point that we have standards in this country that go back over 100 years that dictate the size of the windows in schoolrooms. We know that this works. We're just starting to figure out why. How can it be that light penetrates the skull? That doesn't sound right. Then I remember back to my physical diagnosis. Right, Thomas? Okay, we used to take a very powerful light and we used to stick it on the frontal sinus and it would transilluminate the sinus to see if there was obstruction. You can see them doing this here in this YouTube video. We put it on the maxillary sinus and open the mouth, and we could see the light shining through the bone inside the mouth. That's visible light. Just think how much more near-infrared radiation penetrates bone. You ready for your mind to be blown? Okay, it gets better. Guess what is the number one thing that really helps with reflectance of near-infrared radiation? Trees, leaves, and grass. Wouldn't you know it? In fact, that's what this slide shows, is that these are like powerful reflectors. When the sun hits the leaves, they absorb the information and the energy that they need, but they're very good at reflecting near-infrared radiation, such to the point. Here's a near-infrared photograph. Look at the trees and the leaves. They look like they have snow on them. It's because they're highly reflective. What does this mean? Folks, you don't need to go out into the direct sunlight. You have to be just outside. And not in a concrete jungle, but in trees and nature. Are you guys getting what I'm saying here? Are you putting the dots together? Ellen White was given very clear instruction where to build the sanitariums. There has to be trees. Here's another view of Central Park. Look at that. Here's the contrast, Central Park. You've got buildings. What color are the buildings? Black. They are not reflecting any near infrared. Look at the trees. Isn't that beautiful? We have had reams of environmental research that have showed this. The health benefits of the great outdoors, a systematic review and meta-analysis of green space exposure and health outcomes. Quote, we find that spending time in or living close to natural green spaces is associated with diverse and significant health benefits. It reduces the... Tell me if this list of diseases sound familiar to you. It reduces the risk of type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease, premature death, preterm birth, increases sleep duration. People living closer to nature also had reduced diastolic blood pressure, heart rate, stress. In fact, one of the really interesting things we found is that exposure to green space significantly reduces people's levels of salivary cortisol, a physiological marker of stress. Here's the meta-analysis. In every way, when you're living outside, close to green, you're getting... Here's the final common pathway. Yes, stress is lower. I believe you get better near-infrared radiation. Here's what the spirit of prophecy says. Trees with medicinal properties. The Lord has given me light in regard to many things. He has shown me that our sanitariums should be erected on as high an elevation as necessary to secure the best results, and that they are to be surrounded by extensive tracts of land, beautified by flowers and ornamental trees. These are solar panels for your health. In certain places, preparations were being made to clear the land for erection of a sanitarium. Light was given that there is health in the fragrance of the pine, the cedar, and the fir, and that there are several other kinds of trees that have medicinal properties that are health-promoting. There's also other reasons why. It's not just the infrared radiation. Let not such trees be ruthlessly cut down. Let them live. Here's a list of all of the health benefits of natural, as they call it, daylighting. Okay? Look at this. Vitamin D, vision, bone formation, biological clocks, mood, cheerful, student attendance, sleep, learning achievement, learning, math. You want your kids to do really well in school? Have them study outside. Health, what are things that are reduced? Headaches, cancers, stomach ulcers, high blood pressure, stress, all of these things. Here's a study that was done looking at light. And they did a number of studies that showed that light, just basically being in sunlight, reduced the incidence of diabetes. Here was a great study that was done. They looked at two cities in Europe. One was in the Netherlands, and the other one was in Oxfordshire, Great Britain. And what they did was really interesting. They had a bunch of thousands of people going to get blood tests. And they used the weather information to look at the previous 7 days whenever they got the blood test to see how much sunlight was there in the previous 7 days before the patient got their blood test, because they were getting blood tests done all over the year, right? And they controlled it for season, outdoor temperature, age, sex, percent body fat, all of this. And what they found was that when sunlight was high, there was an improvement in glucose metabolism, in insulin, in LDL cholesterol and triglycerides across the board in all of these patients. Light is not without its drawbacks, though. And we see that reactive oxygen species can be created with light, especially in the ultraviolet area. So ultraviolet light, no question, can cause problems in your skin. But you also need ultraviolet light for vitamin D production. Notice that in the infrared spectrum, there's very little in the way of reactive oxygen species being made. Most of the problem is here in the ultraviolet A and ultraviolet B. Okay? Nevertheless, when they do studies to look at sun exposure and mortality for melanoma, look at the things that were associated with a decreased rate of death. Sunburn, high intermittent sun exposure, something called solar elastosis. This just means basically skin damage from sun. When you had that, that means you were in the sun more often. You actually had a less chance of dying from melanoma. Here's another one from southern Sweden. They looked at over 30,000 women that were selected at random, and they looked over 20 years which ones died and why they died and what their risk factors were in terms of being out in the sun. And it was very clear that those that had sun-avoiding behavior had higher mortalities than those that had sun-avid behaviors. What about multiple sclerosis? So we all know, we've known this for a long time, that people who live at higher latitudes have an increased risk for multiple sclerosis. But what we didn't know, and what was showed here, was that natural light exposure can actually improve the symptoms of multiple sclerosis. What they showed here on these graphs, we have multiple sclerosis patients up top, we have controls at the bottom, and in both of these cases, as we increased the amount of sun exposure, there was an increase in gray matter volume. Kind of goes back to that thing with the brain, right? Sun is coming in, it's being diffused, that light is exciting the mitochondria, it's cooling it down, it's allowing there to be increased metabolism without increasing the heat in the engine. All right, here's what everyone wants to know about, COVID-19. All right, this is really obvious. You know what this is a picture of? This is not COVID-19, this is the flu. Notice that every winter time, the flu deaths go off the charts, almost like clockwork. That's why we get the flu shot every October, because we know that it's going to happen in December. So why is that? Is it because of temperature? Is it because of humidity? Or is it because of sunlight? Right? Those are all things that are connected with each other. So check this out. They did a study looking at COVID-19, and they wanted to know, yeah, we knew back in 2020 that there was an increase in surges in Europe, okay? Why don't we take a look to see when was the surge in the cases in Europe and see if it correlated with temperature, humidity, or latitude, which is basically sunlight, correct? This is what they found. In this first graph, they have all the flags here of Europe. You can see them all here. And they said, okay, let's do the inflation date. The inflation date is basically what's the date that happened when things started to go up. And they plotted it with the temperature in that country. What do you see here? You see a completely horizontal line. What does that mean? Absolutely no correlation whatsoever. They did the same thing with humidity in the country, and they found out that, again, totally a flat line. Then they did the same thing with country latitude. Folks, it has nothing to do with temperature. It has nothing to do with humidity. It has to do with latitude. In other words, picking off one by one, the countries that started the surges were in the north first because they're the ones that lost sunlight first. And then as it started to come down, look what the last country was here in terms of date, Greece. In other words, what seems to be very strong here is it is the average exposure to sunlight. Average exposure to sunlight that determines when things start to fall off the wheels. Now, you could say, well, that's vitamin D. Right? Obviously, the more sunlight you have, the more vitamin D you're going to have, and therefore vitamin D is what we need to have to prevent COVID. Here's the problem. The studies are mixed. There's some studies where you have high vitamin D levels, and it works in some respects, and in other cases, they find that it doesn't work. Maybe vitamin D is a marker of something more that's happening. Does that make sense? Okay. So here's a study that was done. Actually, do I have that study? Let's see. Yeah. So why would that be? Okay, let's talk about this. In the cells, there's something called angiotensin II. Okay, this is going to get a little technical, but angiotensin II is a pro-oxidant. In other words, it's going to make reactive oxygen species worse. In other words, it's going to heat up your car even more. But the body takes care of this by converting it to something called angiotensin 1-7, which is the opposite. It's an antioxidant. It actually helps cool the car down. Now, guess what enzyme does this? ACE2. And here's the connection. Because when the virus spike protein hits the ACE2 receptor, it inactivates it. So when the cells get infected with the virus, now you knock out ACE2, what are you going to have? You're going to have a buildup of the pro-oxidant angiotensin 2, and you're going to have a very big reduction in angiotensin 1-7. That means that angiotensin 2 is going to lead to more reactive oxygen species, and angiotensin 1-7, because there's a lack of it, it's going to increase reactive oxygen species. But wait, there's more. The virus hits, knocks that out, but the virus also creates more white blood cells, and they have oxidative bursts. And they create more oxygen. So all of this contributes to basically a massive increase in the cell in reactive oxygen species. Folks, if you're driving your car and you're running it hot because your cooling system is suboptimal, and then you come to a hill that says COVID-19, what are the chances you're going to make it up that hill? You've got to have a good cooling system if you want to make it up COVID Hill. Does that make sense, what I'm saying? Okay, so what is your cooling system? You have two cooling systems that God has given you. Number one is at night for melatonin. And if you decide to shut down your cooling system by exposing your eyes to bright light at night or light at night, well, then that's the problem that you have. And I'll tell you where that's happening is in the developed world. We have the money for the iPads. We have the money for the electricity. We have the money for the houses. And we're a prisoner of our own success. In the day, God has given us a system. It's to get outside. It's to get near infrared radiation. But what do? We spend, as Americans, only 7% of our time outside. And so as a result, again, we're victims of our own success. Because we're very successful. We get up early in the morning. We go to work. We stay inside. And then we come home after the sun goes down and we never get exposed to near-infrared radiation, which is exactly the mechanism, the primary mechanism that God gives us to make sure that our mitochondria are running smoothly. Proof. These are COVID patients that were admitted to the hospital. In blue, you can see the antioxidants in the body. Notice as you get older, antioxidants in the in the blood goes down. Notice that for COVID patients in red, it was even lower. This is definite proof that COVID reduces the antioxidants. Okay? What about oxidative stress? Once again, as you get older in the controls, oxidative stress goes up naturally as you get older. But with COVID, it was even higher. Okay, now what about damage? That's F2 isoprostane. That's a way we have of measuring oxidative damage in the cells. Notice again, controls. We see a much more oxidative damage as you get older in the controls. It's in every single way worse in COVID-19 infections. But again, you say, well, maybe this is just vitamin D. Because what did we see? We saw that patients early on, that if they had higher vitamin D levels, they did better. But what if vitamin D is a marker for good sun exposure? So here was a study that was done at the University of Edinburgh, and they looked at the United States. And notice there on the map in the United States that they've grayed out the bottom part of the United States during the winter of 2020. They wanted to eliminate from their analysis anywhere in the United States where somebody could have gotten enough sunlight to make vitamin D, because they wanted to completely exclude vitamin D out of the issue. So they looked at just those areas in the northern part of the United States where there's no way you could have gotten enough sunlight to make vitamin D. And you know what they noticed? That it still mattered. The higher the latitude, the worse the mortality outcome. So in other words, there was something about sunlight outside of vitamin D that was causing a benefit in COVID-19. They applied it prospectively to England and also to Italy, and they found exactly the same relationship. Notice they didn't have to block anything out of England and Italy because they're so far north, I guess. Although Italy is kind of in our area. So this is what they concluded. They said, in conclusion, this study is observational, and therefore any causal interpretation needs to be taken with caution. However, if the relationship identified proves to be causal, it suggests that optimizing sun exposure may be a possible public health intervention. Wow. Given that the effect appears independent of vitamin D pathway, it suggests possible new COVID-19 therapies. I have news for you folks. It's pretty old therapy. When I can show you black and white photographs of sanitariums and hospitals that have specifically engineered into their building the fact that they can have beds outside and have their patients suntanning in the sun, they knew even then that exposure to sunlight definitely had benefits. They didn't know why, but they definitely had benefits. I'm sorry, you're gonna take a picture of that. Go ahead. it's incredible. Listen, while we're on the topic, I talked to a neurosurgeon, and she told me that she trained in Seattle at the hospital there in Seattle. I forget exactly what the name was, but she said they had a solarium in their hospital. It was that old. It was an old hospital. And they would take the patients down when it was in the wintertime. They had this glass, and the sun would come through, and when it was summer, they would take the glass off so it would be open air. This is what they did. We've gotten rid of all of that. We've got little rooms with dark windows. The feeble one should press out into the sunshine as earnestly and naturally as do the shaded plants and vines. The pale and sickly grain blade that has struggled up out of the cold of early spring puts out the natural and healthy deep green after enjoying for a few days the health and life-giving rays of the sun. Go out into the light and warmth. Wow. Of the glorious sun, you pale and sickly ones. And share with the vegetation its life-giving, health-dealing power. That's what her advice is for you in the daytime. What is her advice in the nighttime? Remember, we didn't know what the pineal gland was or did, or even what melatonin was when she wrote this down. In 1888, when she wrote to her secretary these words, make it a habit not to sit up after 9 o'clock. Every light should be extinguished. This turning night into day is a wretched health-destroying habit. Start listening to her. This is what it looks like. This is what it looked like 100 years ago. This is an NIR picture of a summer day in a wheat field. This is where our founding fathers grew up. In this type of an environment. The picture on the right is a big black square because it's the NIR picture of our homes, schools, and offices, unless we change course. LED lights don't give you near-infrared. Incandescents used to. But we got rid of those by mandate. You want a mandate. You know the other only other place that you can get near-infrared radiation from? A natural fire. Can you do that now in California? Not unless you live above 3,000 feet. If you want near-infrared radiation, it's not going to happen by accident. You have to do it on purpose. This is what's happened. Look at near-infrared radiation in red. This is 1800, 50% outdoors and campfires. This is 1950, plain glass windows and 25% outdoors. This is 1990, 50% fluorescent bulbs, 50% incandescent bulbs, plain glass windows, 15% outdoors. This is now. 100% visible only, low E glass. You know what low E glass is? We'll talk about that. 7% outdoors. We are frogs in a pot that have been boiling very, very slowly. We got to wake up and we got to realize what it is that we're doing to our bodies. Okay, here are bulbs. Here's a LED bulb in red. All of the energy is expended in the visual spectrum. That's why it's so energy efficient. Look at the yellow. This is what you get from an incandescent bulb. Look how much energy is expended in the near-infrared spectrum. Look at, that's yellow, that's solar, that's light, that's from the sun. Okay, and then the blue is the incandescent bulb, also very effective in the near-infrared. All right, what about glass? If you want to know whether or not your glass is a low E glass, just stand behind it when the sun is hitting you. If you feel warmth from the sun, it's not a low E glass. Check it out. This is regular glass. We're looking at near-infrared here in the red envelope. Okay? Right up top here is clear. That's clear glass. Almost all of near-infrared comes through, no problem. Here is high solar, low E. Here is moderate solar, low E. And then here is low solar gain, low E. So you can have a variable amount of near-infrared radiation coming through that glass. So you're working in an office building, you think you're getting a lot of light, but you're sitting next to a low E glass, you're not getting it. They specifically design it for that purpose, so they don't have to pump energy in and create a lot of air conditioning. Buildings are designed not for you, they're designed for the energy bill. Okay? Have you heard of sick office buildings, sick building syndrome? It's because they want to minimize airflow, they want to minimize air conditioning, and they want to minimize the amount of heat coming into the building. That's why buildings are designed the way they are. They're not designed with you in mind. Okay? This is what we used to have on the left. This is a visible picture of a campfire. Think about this. Campfire. Red. Low. Dark. Infrared radiation. I mean, you could not get better. I mean, it's almost as if the fire was designed for us, right? As opposed to on the right, Times Square, bright lights, high up. This is amazing. God has planned out every aspect. Look at this. Near infrared radiation, it comes up linearly. As the sun starts to rise, near infrared starts to come up, and notice, ultraviolet needs to have direct sunlight, so it's between 10 and 2 that you get the most amount of ultraviolet, and then just delayed after that is when you get a lot of these free radicals. So notice what happens. The first part of the day is preparation. You're gaining, that as the sun starts to come up, you're gaining melatonin, melatonin, melatonin. You've topped off on the melatonin. Now you're ready for that ultraviolet radiation that's going to come in, but you're protected. Any damage that's been done, now the ultraviolet has gone away. By the way, you need that ultraviolet for vitamin D. So it's not all bad, okay? So protection, you're filling up protection on melatonin, and now the ultraviolet comes in, you're getting that vitamin D, but you're protected because you got your stored up. Any damage that's happened, melatonin only now, as the sun goes down, you're all protected. It's a package deal. The timing, how it comes into the body, how it looks, the circadian rhythm, it's all perfectly natural. Look what happens here on the right-hand side. No infrared radiation whatsoever. But because you're inside, you're getting this low-level amount of UV, HEV photons, and then here's your free radicals. It's a small amount, but it's constant, it's every day, and you have no access to melatonin intramitochondrially, unless you purposely do it. Hi, honey, I'm going to the gym inside. You should be going outside on the lawn and mowing the lawn and changing the sprinkler. That would be far more beneficial to you than going to the gym and doing your exercise workout. Do you understand what I'm saying? So we've talked about light. You guys probably knew already how light affects your circadian rhythm, but maybe not this mitochondrial aspect of it, and it's time that we did. So what should we do? We should get as much natural sunlight as possible. Avoid glass in between with reason after waking. Here's the point. You don't have to go into direct sunlight. You have trees. You have plants. You put clothes on, okay? It can penetrate the clothes. I'm beginning to wonder whether or not that light that surrounded Adam and Eve in the garden was that, remember, does it talk not about that warmth? There was a warmth glow around Adam and Eve. I'm sure that was infrared radiation, and it was constantly bathing them. I'm just a scientist here, okay? Exposure to low-level red light, fire, sunset, the body needs this. It needs this anchoring. At sunset time is advisable, and then avoiding any type of light exposure after sunset, especially blue light, and especially 1 to 2 hours prior to bedtime. I tell you, I don't want to read all of this, but boy, after learning this, listen to some of these things. This is a letter Ellen White wrote in April 1st, 1871, the health reformer. There are but few who realize that in order to enjoy health and cheerfulness, they must have an abundance of sunlight, pure air, and physical exercise. We pity little children who are kept confined indoors when the sun is shining gloriously without. If parents would dress their children for healthfulness instead of according to fashion, they would thoroughly clothe the limbs of their girls as they do their boys. She's telling them to put clothes on. She's talking about sunlight, but she's telling them to put more clothes on their limbs to keep them warm. Why? Because maybe she knows this, or maybe she was shown. Infrared radiation can penetrate those clothes, no problem. And then let them go outdoors in spring, summer, and fall to sport and play as free as the lambs. Do not close your blinds and have your windows draped with 1 or 2 curtains to shut out the beautiful sun that bears health and cheerfulness in its bright beams. Parents, do not close the pleasant rooms in your homes for your children and open them merely to visitors. I've been in many houses where the best rooms were kept closed by blinds and curtains so that not a ray of sunshine could brighten, gladden, and purify the rooms from the commencement of the week to the close. These choice closed rooms, deprived of the health-giving rays of the sun, seem like damp cellars. A chill seemed to penetrate me as I tarried even a short time in these beautiful rooms, held too precious from even the rays of the sun to be admitted. She goes on, I mean, statement after statement after statement about sunlight. So there needs to be a complete revolution in our thinking. Because if we just keep going on the way we are, we're not going to get enough near-infrared radiation. I think that is the problem, one of the major problems. We know that diet is an issue. We know from studies that a vegetarian diet as opposed to a low-carbohydrate, high-protein diet can reduce the incidence of severe COVID by almost fourfold. Okay? But that's not the only issue. We may think that we are rich, but in fact, we are at a disadvantage because of the lifestyle that we have. And so I wanted to bring this to your attention. If you are interested in this, I will let you know that we just published yesterday on my MedCram channel a video that covers all of this. So if you go to our channel and type in light as medicine, you will see about a 2-hour presentation of this where we go into a little bit more of the science, and you can share that. I think, though, that this is extremely important, and we need to understand this. So let's bow our heads as we close. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for the information that you've provided us and a way that we can be more healthy. As we know that sunshine is a doctor that you have given us, help us to understand it and to use it. In thy name, amen.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.